is a young singer from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hey, everybody, it's Sonny. I am just letting you know you're listening on the iTunes feed. Go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. And you will be able to leave comments and send messages and such. You'll also get these episodes, in a more timely fashion. This week, on this episode, we're talking about Elvis. Elvis has been out for weeks now. Wouldn't you have liked to have known if you should go see Elvis? I don't know. Maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't. But you should go sign up at the Patreon. Keep this whole project sustainable, and make sure that we can keep putting Vic in, fancy limos and crab cake spectaculars. I don't know what he eats anymore with the gout. But anyway, go check out the Patreon. This week we're going to be talking about Thor: Love and Thunder. Going to be a very exciting episode. I hated it, but maybe Vic and JBL liked it. I don't know. We'll see.
Give him a warm hayride welcome, Mr. Elvis Presley.
Get a haircut, buttercup.
In that moment, I watched that skinny boy transform into a superhero.
Wish to promote you, Mr. Presley.
Born through a party and a child out of jail.
Are you ready to fly?
I'm ready. Ready to fly.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, welcome back, and where are you?
Hey, what's up, Victorino?
Hey. Oh,
you were just out with your gumar? Gonna go out and get some gabagool over at Sergio's.
Oh, that's quite an accent you got up there. So here's what's interesting. You hear about families from the north. They move when their kids are very young to the south, and suddenly the children are talking like southerners and such. Is something going to happen to your family? Are they going to start saying, like, when I go up to Jersey, everybody's, "Hey, Victor," is it going to be like that?
It'll be very interesting to see how that shakes out over the coming years. It's great. I'm up here first, Victorino.
JVL.
I had no idea who you guys were going to have in for me last week. And when I heard the dulcet tones of Michael Warren,
America's Dad,
it was fantastic.
The Mulch King.
It was, Mike, thank you for sitting in, and what a great show it was with you.
Yes. Mike is a delight.
Can we also start with congratulations for our friend of the show, Kristen Soltis Anderson, who...
Friend of the show, co-host in the past,
Just, absolutely wonderful.
Just news. Now, I don't want to complain, but I had thought that KSA and I had an agreement that I would be on the second wave of texts. That she, like your first wave of texts with the baby pictures are to
family.
The really close friends and family. But then you have the second wave of friends. And I thought that our agreement was that instead I have to get a forward of a tweet.
That's the second wave. JVL, the second wave is tweets now.
Yeah, so, tweets are the second wave.
Yeah.
What a baby.
I'd like to consider myself in the second wave. That is an adorable looking
KSA
baby.
KSA with a beautiful baby girl. She and Chris.
Baby!
This little girl is lucky to have Kristen and Chris, who are going to be great parents. So congratulations, guys. Okay, so I'm in Jersey. I made it. We are in the house. There are boxes everywhere, but the internet is working half the time.
That's okay.
You've got a mesh.
Now.
I have a mesh.
Explain your mesh setup.
My mesh setup is the Netgear Orbi, which of course doesn't tell you much because there are like 9 different types of Orbi. The whole mesh router system is a mystery. The answer seems to be you should just spend $1,500, but I didn't do that. And
Well, I mean, you don't need to spend $1,500. A good Eero system. That's what I have. I have the Eero system. Works perfectly. $200. $200.
I had a mesh, and now I'm in the middle of a class action lawsuit. Thank you, Jamie. You like that?
What do you guys want to hear? I got so many moving stories.
Yeah. How is life out there? How is life in the promised land?
Well, you know, so I'm driving with G Money a few days ago, and he's in the back seat. We're just out doing one of the 15 trips to Home Depot that we've done so far.
Yeah.
And he says, "Dad, you know, I really like our new house." I said, "That's great, buddy. I'm so glad to hear it." He goes, "So when are we going to go home?" I said, "What do you mean home?" He said, "You know, back to our other house."
Oh, hurting.
I said, "Never, buddy. This is where we're living." And there's this
where we live now.
Silence. And he goes, "What?" And I was like, "Oh, he thinks so yeah. far that it's like we've been having a fun staycation at a B&B or something."
Oh, man.
How many days into it was this?
It was like 2 weeks into it for him. Can we talk about movers? I think everybody likes talking about movers.
Yeah.
Sure. We chatted. I don't remember if we chatted in the last time with you about the mover situation. Sorry. How did it go?
Oh, it went. It went. Mm-hmm. Early on, my movers were of Eastern European descent.
Excuse me.
And I was having a nice conversation with one of them. I really liked these guys. And we were just talking about this and that. And, you know, I was trying to get his story from him. And he talked about how he had, gotten married here in America and then divorced and then had a kid and then got divorced. I said, "Well, you know, that's great." He said, "Yeah, I wish we'd had another kid." I was like, "Well, you know, kids are hard and it's tough." And he says, "You know, people aren't having enough kids." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's true."
Did you give him some of your literature?
This is something I know a lot about. He says, "You know, especially here in America and in Europe." All of a sudden, my spidey sense starts tingling. He goes, "You know, not like in Africa and Asia. Pretty soon, people don't start having more babies. There just won't be any more white people anywhere."
Oh, come on. There we go. You didn't say that. You didn't say that. This is what the movies don't tell me, I guess. I guess they leave that part out of the
And I just was like, "Whoa, we got to white supremacy real fast, didn't we?" I was just like, "Tell me your story, and then we're at white power
bill." That's his story. I mean, look, that's an integral part of his story.
So
don't deny his truth.
I guess I don't deny his truth. So here is the thing that happened. So after quoting me an incredibly high amount of money as to what it was going to cost to do this move, he then says to me, as we're two-thirds of the way through the move, "You have more stuff than I thought. We can't fit it on two trucks. We have to get a third truck." And he's like freaking out about who's going to get a third truck and, you know, it's going to cost more. He's like going nuts about it. And I was like, "Okay, well, you know, you're the professional. I'm sure you'll figure it out." And, it's like hours of him like, you know, in his, you know, very nice Eastern European tongue on the phone. And at one point he says to me, "How can you be so calm? Why aren't you freaking out?" I said, "Buddy, would it help you if I freaked out?"
That is a line, as you know, from Bridge of Spies.
Oh, I said, because, you know, if it is helpful to the situation, if it will get us to a resolution faster for me to freak out, then I guess I'll do it. But my working understanding here is that you're going to do your job and I'm going to do my job. And he was like, "I just don't understand how you can be so calm." And I was like, "I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a white man with four kids."
Did you explain to him that you have already done your job by writing him the check?
Oh, no.
For the service?
It's
his problem to figure this out.
I had to stroke a third check, Santino. Third check. And then I had to go and get cash out for the tip. Because evidently, if you don't tip your movers. And you know what? One of the things that I saw as I was hunting around. So my sister and I and my brother-in-law are sitting this final night trying to like crowdsource what is an appropriate tip. I think I reached out to you guys about this, right? And many of the things that I saw suggested that it's like a restaurant bill where it should be a percentage. Where
I was going to ask, 10 is it
15% even? And I thought to myself,
no,
10% of this is going to be another $1,500.
No, that's not right.
Should I be giving these movers an extra $1,500 after they fucked me on how much the whole thing was going to cost in the first place?
No, you got to tip at a rest stop.
You tip a flat rate per guy. Like between $50 and $100 per guy, something like that. I think for that distance of a move,
yes. I think.
Wait, I have a question. So was it the same guys in the truck up? Did the same guys unload the truck? I have a second question. Did you get like a mom and pop mover? Is this like a guy who has like one truck? No. I don't understand.
Nope.
Was it like Mayflower?
No, that type of.
You don't have to tell me. Don't tell me the actual name, it was a local,
but an actual company. And what many of these companies do is they don't maintain their own fleet of trucks. They are renting the trucks.
They rent the trucks.
This was the Bratislava Bros. That's what they are.
So anyway, it's fine. We're all out here. Nobody wants to hear about my moving.
You didn't get like a binding. You didn't get like a binding estimate?
I mean, I got an estimate. I don't know how binding any of these things are.
And the estimate was, in fairness,
it was based on the idea of there being two trucks. And everybody's estimate was two trucks. Again, I did bid this out to multiple vendors, and everybody's estimate was this job will require two trucks.
How big was the truck?
26 feet.
So it's like one of the big moving trucks.
The largest moving truck you can have before you expand into semis.
Before you hit semis.
So it wasn't a semi. Right. It wasn't like a Mayflower container thing.
Yeah. When do you tip, by the way? Do you tip, when does that happen? Because I would always think, in my mind, we always end up tipping people at the end of the service, but I always think in my mind that it would be more useful
to tip them in the beginning, right?
Same thing with parking valets, by the way. I read a book. The same guy who did the waiter rant. He did another book about tipping, and supposedly, according to his reporting, he talked to parking valet people who say, "Oh, if they don't get a tip at first, they don't like the guy. They do terrible things in your car."
I don't doubt that for a minute.
Don't doubt that for a second. So my move, I had different guys in DC and different guys in Dallas.
So I assume you tipped them both.
I tipped the guys in Virginia.
It's another snow job.
Speaking of which, save that one for later.
I think we ended up doing like $50 a guy in both locations was about what it came out to. Wow. So I don't know. Maybe I screwed them. I don't know. Maybe that was too low, but
whatever. The point is we're here and I've already gotten to taste the fruits of living in New Jersey, because when I went to see Elvis this week, I went on a date with my mother-in-law, Peggy. I said, "Peggy, I'll come over. I'll pick you up." We dropped Flash off at her house so that he and Pop could sit and watch Yankees baseball all night. And we
on the Yes Network.
And yeah, Peggy and I went out to the fanciest AMC we could find, which was
the look on your face when you said the fanciest AMC I could find, because I wanted to ask. My understanding of the New Jersey theater situation is that it is poor.
Well, we can talk about the AMC because it is interesting. I went to a concept AMC. It was not a normal one. It was AMC Dine-In, which there are a few, which is really a halfway house version between AMC and Alamo. And we can talk about that experience later. But the truly great experience was being able to sit there with my mother-in-law and watch this ridiculous movie, and it was great. The idea that I have a movie buddy, because she, I don't know if you guys remember, but I often take her when it's the summertime and we're down at the beach together. I would take her to see like Rampage, or I think she and I went to see Bridesmaids together once. I love going to the movies with my mother-in-law. It's great.
Really depends on the movie.
I imagine it's a lot like going to see a movie with your dad, Vic.
Oh, yeah. He's very easy. He hardly says anything, though. You know, he enjoys it.
But it's great.
I saw Kate. It was the funniest thing is, my dad and Kate, just the three of us, over the years have all seen like most of the Harry Potter movies together. Because he's like, I got to see it, you know, got to see what happens to the Half-Blood Prince. Perfect. Can't be left behind. But
have you been watching the Fantastic Beasts movies?
No.
So you're not
Hallows Part 2. That's it.
Okay. So you're not watching with bated breath as Ezra Miller destroys
his
whole career. Or whatever. I don't know if you guys have been following this.
Oh yeah. So anyway, Sonny, how are you, buddy?
I've had a terrible like 3 weeks. It's been not great. So some folks will remember, I mentioned this on the show. My lovely wife was out of town for a week. She went up to visit her mom and her husband.
You've been driving your daughter to camp in Plano, Texas, 9 hours away each way.
Driving my kids to various camps.
Yes, it's a suburb of Dallas, so it's only 9 hours away.
This week, the camp was at the Perot Museum.
Oh, yes. The Ross Perot Museum?
Oh, yeah, the Ross Perot Museum. The Perot Museum, I think I've talked about this before on the show. I think I've talked about this on the show before, but the Pro Museum is awesome because it's like a natural history museum. So, you know, it has like dinosaurs and birds and, you know, diamonds and gems and whatnot, right? But then it has a whole wing that's like the miracle of oil.
Yes.
Which is like no joke. That's like the whole, it's like, you
sounds
know,
like a Simpsons
humans,
bit.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds
humans
like Monty
used to rely on the sun for energy, and you could only feed like 2 humans per square mile. But then we found hydrocarbons, and now we frack them. And it's like it's genuinely like Troy McClure doing
Welcome
to the wonderful world of oil. So that's fun. I'm glad she's learning about the importance of oil. I think she's actually learning about dinosaurs this week, which become oil, which is yeah. An equally important
dinosaurs are an important part of the petroleum life cycle.
Yeah. So anyway, over the weekend, last weekend, we had to go out to California for a funeral. I don't really want to talk about that too much, but it was awesome. It was good times. At the funeral and at the wake and all that stuff, just really wonderful. We did get to spend some time in lovely Southern California, which the weather was fantastic.
Home of the
like
Big 80, Ten,
80 degrees. This Big Ten. I don't know if you guys have been.
I saw that.
Just saw it moments ago.
Or is it happening?
It's happening. It's a done deal. USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12 to go to the Big Ten.
Oh, so the Pac-12 becomes the Pac-10
and Washington again. And Oregon, I think, are leaving too to go to I think the Big 12.
The Big East. I don't know.
Might as well.
So the college football landscape has altered.
Yeah, University of Washington is actually going to the SEC. Sorry, correction.
That makes more sense. And then on top of all this, so we get back on Monday. I take my mom back to the airport. She was nice enough to fly out here. I take her back to the airport. She flies home. And then I have a teeth cleaning. At the dentist. I got some dental.
Oh, we
dental
can't, you know, this show
here.
Can't handle any more dental
I got,
talk.
I got some dental talk here. So well, I was going in.
Did you get any cadaver bone?
No, thank God. Thank God I did not have any malignant horror movie teeth in my head.
Yeah.
No, I went to the sad confession I have to make. I have not had a proper teeth cleaning since I moved to Texas. It's been like 2.5 years.
Funny.
Long
okay,
time.
But remember this.
I go every four months.
Seriously?
Yes.
How do you do
every
that?
Six,
that's
every
disgusting.
6 months and that's enough no. for me. But the
4 months.
Listeners need to be reminded.
6 months is not enough for me.
Listeners need to be reminded that Sonny famously has perfect teeth.
I've never had a cavity and I have still never had a cavity. Yeah. I went to the dentist and they were checking me out and they scheduled, it was a 90-minute appointment for this first one. Cause they were like, it's your first time. We got to do all the x-rays. Blah.
Yeah, yeah,
and I don't know if like dental technology has had like a quantum leap forward in the last 2.5 years, but they put my head in this machine.
Yeah.
And the thing was like spinning
yes,
around.
Yes, you got a Panorex.
And it was taking like 3D pictures of my skull.
And you know,
it was actually kind of cool.
And you know what that you does? Know? You know what that does? That raises the amount of money you have to pay.
Of course.
I guarantee you, you know, the dental insurance is like, what? Yeah. Oh no, you didn't need that.
So anyway, we do all, for 40 minutes, we're taking x-rays, 40 minutes.
And you can't move.
And we sit down to actually do the inspection and do the cleaning. And the hygienist looks in there. She's like, yeah, we're going to need to do like an extensive cleaning. And I was like, okay, I can kind of understand that. And on top of that, I had a like minor infection on my gum line.
You basically came in with like the teeth of a homeless person. Is that what happened?
No, was it all yellowed?
I mean, no cavities, but they were all yellowed and things.
Well, I mean, they were like the normal amount of yellow. I mean, I would not say they were overly yellow. But the dentist looked.
Girl.
I mean, the dentist looked.
Oh, yeah. You know that kind of thing. You know?
Yeah, sorry. Basically. So the dentist looked at my teeth and literally she looked at them for like 2 minutes and was like, no, these are all fine. You just got to get that fixed. So we ended up having, so the first hour and a half appointment ended up only being about an hour. And the oral hygienist was like, I got to schedule you for the next 2 days to get in here and get them. And so I had to go back for the next 2 days and get like where there was the gum infection. I did have to get some like Novocaine. So they shot it up real good. My mouth did not work for basically that whole day. And the second day, like numbing agents.
So you legit had an infection.
Yeah, no, there was like a, so I still have my wisdom teeth.
It's probably
part
an
of my
abscess.
Perfect teeth. But yeah. my perfect teeth. And there was like a abscess on the gums. the dentist was like, it's not on the tooth. So we're not actually that worried about it. It's just, you've got a little pocket here where you've got those wisdom teeth back there and they look great. We don't have to take them out or anything, but you know, it's hard to floss. That's like,
the doctor was ready for his boat. Wisdom teeth will need to come out.
Right. Very hard to floss
I'm
back
telling
there.
You, man.
I do so much flossing back there. Let me tell you, it's impossible to reach. So anyway,
you have like the teeth from it's like the version of Unbreakable. But
no, it is this is entirely genetic. Like my dad is the same way. My dad, I think, has had like one cavity in his whole life. Like my mom's teeth are like chalk, basically. Anyway. Long story short, I had to go to the dentist for 3 straight days, which was tons of fun. Tons of fun, you guys. I love going to the dentist every day.
Well, you don't have to tell me.
So anyway, that's been my
three dental visits and a funeral.
three dentist trips and a funeral. That's good. Southern California was nice. It was actually nice. I like whatever. Well, we could talk off the air about the actual ceremony. I don't want to talk about on the air, but
ceremony.
Southern California itself was very nice, we went to a very nice restaurant in Newport Beach.
Oh, sure.
Like we were right on the water, literally right on the water. I'll send you guys pictures, but it was fun times. Fun. We this restaurant. So one story about we went to this restaurant. It was a fairly nice restaurant. It was like pretty expensive because again, it's on the water. So it's like a fairly nice restaurant, but it was just stuffed. The tables were stuffed with women who were like cosplaying Real Housewives.
Were they cosplaying or were they actual?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe that's just because real because
no,
it's
they were,
Newport Beach.
They were definitely like wannabe Real Housewives of Newport Beach. Like, they were like 52-year-old women all dressed up and done up. And when one of them would show up, everyone at the table would go, and then they'd start doing jokes.
Like
to the extent that the manager had to come over at one point was like, ladies, you got to calm down because you're making everybody else here uncomfortable. And that they did not care for that. They did not like to be shushed. Anyway, fun times.
Intriguing. Maybe they were auditioning for something.
Vic, how are you doing?
I'm fine. You know, I've learned to live with that bump in my jaw that everyone tells me is not a tumor or an abscess. It's just this bone that's stuck out there. So, you know.
The malignant tooth?
No, unrelated. You remember. I mean, it's this bone on the side of my jaw.
I can't look at that. Don't try to show me.
It's probably just a result of grinding. So they did it, the Panorex, and my dentist went right in there. Jonathan's covering his eyes. And he's like, that's bone. That's not a, it would show
it's
up
a big bone.
Yeah. You know, it's jutting out. It happens.
Is the Wolverine blood doing all this to your body?
What was that?
The Wolverine blood.
The Wolverine
that you take.
Blood. I don't
is
know.
That
I don't
what
know.
Has caused
no, I'll tell you
all
what.
Of
it's
these
like
bony protuberances.
I'll tell you what's your, going on. It's like
how about your claws?
After
the claws,
I split. After I, yeah, well, that's thing. Happening too. Not, it's not happening to you guys with the retractable claws. Like it hurts when it comes out, but it's pretty handy. I think it's out ever since I split my tooth and I had it removed that I couldn't wear a mouth guard. The grinding, and then the grinding causes a thing called a torus. It's not that uncommon, but nevertheless, it's weird. But we'll see. Maybe they were wrong and the x-ray didn't pick up the fact that it's a tumor. Okay. Other than that, went to the mall over the weekend with...
Which mall?
Tyson's. Tyson's, you know, the mall where there was a gang shooting.
Tyson's one?
Yes. Yeah, I don't... I'm not ready for Galleria. Come on now. It's for my daughter. She had to buy some stuff. First of all, again, no idea how that clothes for girls are expensive. That's crazy. Two, kind of weird hanging out, you know, outside dressing rooms of women's and girls like clothing stores. So
in
I
in what covered. Way? Weird
the perfect
for you.
Cover the perfect cover. Oh, it's my daughter. Oh, by the way, she's
just here with my daughter.
I thought she was in that dressing room. Sorry. Right. Next thing you know, it's like Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School. You know, he's looking for his son in the sorority house. By the way, you're perfect. You know, no. But then we went to the ridiculous conveyor belt sushi because she loves that. It's such a. It's a, you know what I'm talking about. It's
oh, yeah.
So ridiculous, but. It's like the second or third time I've done
sushi
it
go round.
in my life. Right. And I just wanted to, provide our listeners with some advice in case they go to the conveyor belt. Number one, let it go around for a while. You don't need to sit down and start grab. Oh, that looks good. I'm going to take it. See what's out there. You know, don't waste it. You're going to end up like with what a California roll.
What if you take it and then what if you see something you like and somebody else takes it, Victorino?
Well, there's going to be more. I'm convinced of this where they will refill these things. And every now and then it's like the same number of things. And suddenly there's something new that appears. That's kind of exciting. But just let it go around a couple times.
Can you put in requests? Can you
not
like
that
flag
I know.
The
no,
guy down?
No, not that I know.
That's not
I
allowed. It's just like whatever they put out there.
Putting it out there. Yeah. Okay. So that's just let it go. And then once you get a general feel of, okay, now I'm ready. Then take something that you want. But, you know, once you take it, you can't put it back. So just wait for it. And don't waste it on like a California roll. You can get that anywhere. Look for something that looks interesting. That's my first rule. The second one is one plate at a time. Like you might like a couple things and don't do that. I'd say this thing will keep on going. It's not going to end. So when you're finished, then take your time. And then get something else. Don't start loading up your table. You can get full. I mean, just there's no rush is my whole point. And then my third advice is, of course, avoid the gimmicks, you know, because you're there for the sushi or the sashimi. There was one thing called Japanese snacks. I'm not going to get that. You know, it's like, I don't know, something like little crackers. I don't need that. How much does that cost? There was another one, peanut butter and jelly roll. That's basically like white bread and they stuff the peanut butter. Maybe if you have kids. You know, okay, that you can.
Yeah,
can
I don't think
that.
That's a grown-up.
No, I wouldn't get that. And then every now and then they'll throw in some dessert, and, you know, and on the conveyor belt is like a slice of cheesecake. You know, that's a bit much. So my warning to everybody is just to be consistent with what you get, because if you start mixing in all sorts of different things, you can have a situation in your stomach, and you're in a mall and mall bathrooms. You don't need to go there unless you're just going there for like number one. But if there's anything else, you don't want to be in a mall for that kind of things. It's
what about in Galleria?
That's an interesting one. I would rather go to like the hotel connected to Galleria, like where Johnny Depp was. I would go to the Ritz where Johnny Depp was and use that bathroom. Otherwise, there's all sorts of horrible. Things.
Oh, was he staying? Was he staying at the for
yes,
his
he was.
Trial?
He
was staying at the Ritz out in
Tyson's.
Tyson's instead of the one at Pentagon City. I guess that makes
yeah,
sense.
No, it was down the street because it was on Chainbridge Road.
Yeah, yeah,
it was
yeah.
Right down there. And he went to the, and he would go to the Palm and get a chicken parm and get like $1,000 wines or whatever it is. I think
of course he would.
My sources tell me it was like, I don't know, $3,000 a dinner or something like that in any event. But again, careful how much you.
Could be king.
Yes. Oh, speaking of which. I had another one, by the way, Sonny. My other
I'm sorry.
Mine was a little bit more crude. And it was just careful how much you eat because you don't want to have a bathroom situation. Speaking of which, over the weekend, Elvis squeezed one out at the box office. Squeezed one. I thought it was going to be a tie. $31.2 million over Top Gun Maverick with $29.6 million. And in third place was Jurassic World Dominion with $26.7 million. Box office thoughts. I have two thoughts for you. One, what is the drop on Jurassic? And two, where did Lightyear go?
Another thing, though, worth noting, there was a fourth movie that grossed more than $20 million this weekend. The Black Phone Group did $23 million.
Yes, it did better than.
People were expecting it to do, you know, low teens, mid-teens. And it's one of these horror movies that just, you know, these you can never be quite sure which one's going to pop. But this one, I think, did pretty well. And I think it might actually have legs, too, because, A, there's not a ton of other horror movies on the horizon.
Or,
except for the Jordan Peele. Nope. Yeah, this is a Blumhouse movie. Blumhouse. I saw it this week after one of my many trips to the dentist. And it's interesting. It's not a good movie exactly, but it has some kind of good stuff in it. Anyway, the drop on Jurassic World was, I think like 55% or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's holding. Okay. It's going to end up, you know, getting up towards 350 to 375 somewhere in there. So that's fine for this movie. It's about what you would have expected.
And Lightyear
for a threequel. Lightyear is just falling off a cliff. I mean, it dropped 64%, I think, first weekend to second weekend, which is a huge drop. That's a huge drop. And I did not expect that, frankly. I figured it would hold okay because it's like the only new family movie out there.
Yeah, except that it failed because kids didn't want to see it.
But I think Disney has created a problem for itself in which they have trained folks to wait for cartoons on Disney Plus. I think that's a real.
Why don't kids want to see it? I saw the trailers, and the first one I like better than the second one.
My kids wanted to see it,
and I thought
it's positioned almost like it's a hard sci-fi with a character they don't like, the character that they know, but it's a different version of the character, like with the voice. Yeah.
Well, again, I mentioned this on the last show how confused I was about this. Yeah. But the second thing is, you know, you'd be going in as a kid saying, "Where's the other toys?"
Yeah, no, I just think it was wrong in every conceivable way.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. I mean, we'll see what happens with Minions.
Minions is going to do really well.
Oh. I think it's probably gonna do pretty well. But I think Disney has created a minor problem for itself with its emphasis on Disney Plus, with its moving everything from Pixar for the last 2 years straight to Disney Plus.
Just because it knows that all the Pixar movies are garbage.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Post Lasseter. Post Lasseter. What did you say, Sonny?
Soul was good. I like Soul.
False.
But they've also been, I mean, they've also only given the Disney movies short runs in theaters. I'm thinking Encanto was there for 30 days.
Yeah.
Raya and the Last Dragon was like split between, it was
gotta be a regret for them because that's gotta be their biggest hit, Encanto.
People came to that. The Encanto is like the Princess Bride. In the theaters, it did not work. That's and interesting. The strength of the soundtrack.
I love that music.
Saved. Yeah. Right. I mean, so people came back to the movie once everybody was listening to the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, Lightyear sucked. Was bad box office. But Elvis was kind of a surprise hit too. I mean, I was texting our friend John Podhortz, and I said, I put the over under on it at like 17 and a half million. I thought it was going to be a bomb.
To other Baz Luhrmann.
Well, I mean, the only Baz Luhrmann movie that has opened higher than this was The Great Gatsby, which opened to $50 million, but that also starred
Leonardo
DiCaprio. Yeah. And it starred, you know, Tobey Maguire, like that had like real stars, was kind of positioned, and frankly it has, you know, it has a good pedigree. People want to see Great Gatsby movie. But I thought this was going to be a tremendous bomb because I figured it was aimed at old audiences, and old audiences have not come out to movies. I mean, it's been kind of the
last holdouts are the older audiences, and the audience for this I think was 61% over the age of 35 and 50% over the age of 45,
yeah,
which is a very old audience, relatively speaking.
Thanks a lot.
It's a very, well, I mean, just is. It's like over 35. I'm over 35. I'm like in the old quadrant. Yeah. I'm like old man quadrant.
JVL and I are now in the ancient one, I guess. So that's what we're talking about this week, by the way. It's Elvis by Baz Luhrmann. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
I think what people have to understand about Elvis, the movie by Baz Luhrmann, is that it is not a musical biopic. It is a superhero movie. This is not a movie that is about Elvis and his life and times, really. It is a movie about the creation of an American myth and an American god. It is very much a movie about the mythology of America, the story we like to tell ourselves, the heroes we like to create to portray it. And it's not subtle about this. I mean, there's a whole early stretch of the film where Elvis as a child is running around with the Shazam lightning bolt. He's running around with the Shazam lightning bolt going from again, this is not a subtle movie. He's ducking between the whorehouse, right, where they're like playing R&B
and the
church that where they're doing a revival. It's the sacred and the profane. And it's, you know, this is what rock and roll is. It's the sacred and the profane, yeah, and blah, blah, blah. But it is a movie about a superhero and his origin story, his birth, his life, his death, and what that meant to America and to the people around him. You know, I went in this, I was kind of dreading this movie because I am not a Baz Luhrmann fan. I think
it's a bit much,
even as somebody who likes movies that are like maximalist, kind of over the top movies. He's always rubbed me the wrong way. Moulin Rouge is like, makes my teeth hurt just thinking about it. And The Great Gatsby, I thought had its moments, but it is still kind of it's just kind of an over the top.
How about Romeo
mess.
And Juliet?
I like it. Okay. I mean, I'm torn on that one because I kind of like it, but I also like, again, it's just a lot.
It's just a lot of movie. Yes, it's a lot.
And this is a lot of movie, but it's a lot of movie in the service of a very specific thing, again, which is creating this idea of Elvis as larger than life myth. And it does it in an interesting way. You know, I've seen people compare the movie to Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, right? Or Walk Hard with Dewey Cox, whatever. Whatever that movie's called, which is like the like, if you've ever seen a musical biopic, this,
right,
it's a parody with like, John C. Reilly.
Like this is post Walk the Line, right? This is
right, exactly. You never need to see another musical biopic after you see this movie because it hits it like shows all of the beats that you hit in these stories. But I don't think this movie is like that. This movie is more like Amadeus, and the Solieri figure is Colonel Tom Parker, who is played by, Tom Parker. Who is played by
Tom Hanks
in a fat suit with a kind of vaguely ridiculous
accent,
European Afrikaners accent. I don't know what exactly that is
Dutch.
He's doing, but
Dutch.
Yes.
Faja.
But you have to have some people have complained that there's too much Tom Parker in this, that it's like from his perspective too much. But I think it actually works really well because you have to.
But
have
that was the same grotesque thing with Amadeus, which was narrated
exactly,
by the
exactly.
villain. Right.
Exactly. This is, again, he is the Solieri in this. Mm-hmm. You can't. Amadeus does not work as a movie without Solieri. And the whole way the film is built is it's like, look at this disgusting pretender who like talks about having to, you know, trick people with his snowmanship. Mm-hmm. He's got to do the snow job, mm-hmm, to shake free all of their loose cash. And you compare that like conniving huckster to a guy with actual talent, right? Elvis is like a force of nature. He's like a man who's like very hip twitches, mm-hmm, can like induce involuntary spasms in women, right? Like that is his superpower. Superpower is not really the music. It's the impact that his hip wiggle has, mm-hmm, on the rest of the world. I kind of loved it. It's such a ridiculous movie, but I loved how ridiculous it was. I loved how they leaned into it. Again, it's a superhero movie. It's not a musical biopic. It's not even really a Baz Luhrmann picture, so much as it is like something that is out of the Warner Brothers comic book movies. And frankly, I think the movie, when it slows down a little bit in the last 45 minutes or so, this is too long. The whole thing is too long. The first 90 minutes are very like fast paced, mm-hmm. high tempo, go, 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 go. And then things kind of slow down a bit as Elvis,
as he gets bogged down in Vegas, you mean?
Yeah. As he gets bogged down in Vegas and as
a prisoner,
he's
a prisoner against his own will.
The movie slows down, and like stylistically, it slows down. It's not just, you know, the fact that we're not really going anywhere. It's that he's stuck there, and we're not cutting as quickly, and we're not doing as many ridiculous things. And that section of the film, again, it goes on a little bit long. It didn't quite work for me, but I like, on the whole, I'm shocked at how much I liked it.
JVL, you have all sorts of expressions on your face. I'm trying to read them, but I'm not really sure what to make of them.
Yeah, I'm a little weighed out here, because in my notes, I literally have written that this isn't a biography of Elvis. It's the fable version of the Elvis Presley story. And it's rare that I find myself in near 100% agreement with Sonny, but basically there, with a little bit of a caveat, I really didn't like the second half because, for reasons I don't really know. For the first hour 15, hour 20, I sat in my seat thinking to myself, this is a truly great movie. Right up until he comes back from the army. And once he hits Hollywood, the whole thing just bogs down to my mind. Yeah. And I mean, it's 2 hours, 40 minutes. It's probably 30 minutes too long, maybe 40 minutes too long. But on the other hand, I can't tell you where I'd cut. It's not like that back 40% of it is bad exactly, but it just feels bloated.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything slows down. Yeah. It goes from being this kind of hyperkinetic, again, lots of whip pans and dolly pushes and like rapid cutting, mm-hmm. and like super and like a hyper he shoots this movie. It's funny, he shoots this movie like it's the movies that called to mind were 300 and Sin City. Yeah. Where there's the constant green screen background that creates a kind of hyper reality. And you see that
there's a very, very Sin City moment where you get an actual, like the animated black and white, right? Yeah. Of the car going down the, same thing in my notes.
But once they get to that Hollywood sign and have the conversation with the hippies, it all just, all that kind of stops.
Yeah.
It just slows down. And also the other thing that happens here is that Tom Parker recedes from the narration a bit. He becomes less focal,
right?
And less. And I think that's a problem. I think if you rip Salieri out of the last hour of Amadeus, that movie doesn't work.
So one of the, you thought about Amadeus. I thought about Hamilton, where Parker is the Aaron Burr figure of this movie. And the problem is that in Hamilton, Burr becomes more important as you go on. And in Elvis, in this telling, Parker becomes less important as you go on. So you're sort of building away from the climax of that relationship. But the other real problem, I actually think, is all about rights. The truth is that I think the reason the back half feels bloated and the front half does not is because the front half is telling a lot of story in 75 minutes. And then the back half, the truth is, for the amount of what's going on, I mean, it only covers like 5 years of his life, I think, you know, or maybe a little bit more than that, but not a whole lot. And it just is pulled up. And why is that? It's because this is a blessed piece, blessed by the Elvis Presley Corporation.
I was wondering about
it. Had to be if they were going to get the music, because you can't make this movie without the music. And in order to
to sanitize Elvis's life, those last 5 or 6 years, you have to just chop out all of the important stuff that happened. And so the extent to which, if you know even this much about Elvis, this is sanitized to a ridiculous degree, which again, wouldn't be a problem, except that it means you, the second half of your picture,
you're not
very little
all
happening
that
in it. Well, there's just not as much happening, right? I mean, when the sanitized version just has, it's flatter. There's less story to tell. And I think that's the problem, is that the, you know, this had to be signed off on by the Elvis Presley Corporation. And to do that, you would have had to make this, I think, a shorter movie, because there just isn't much happening.
And I don't even mind the sanitization. I mean,
no, I don't either. I'm not.
There's a lot of faintly ridiculous stuff in this movie about like equal rights and like, you know, Elvis Presley as like crusader for civil rights, or like Elvis Presley as there's a very funny moment in the film where before Elvis is a big star, they are listening to his album, they're listening to one of his LPs, and Tom Parker is like, oh yeah, that's by the record company that makes all the albums for the colored kids, right? And one of the young guys is like, he's gonna open up for us in front of the Hayride, you know, but he's like, we should have him at the carnival. And Parker's like, we can't have a colored kid at the carnival, we can't do that. And the other character says, no, he's white. And then everybody else in the scene is like, oh, he's white. It's like having a sociology major write a line about cultural appropriation in a movie. Like that's how that whole sequence plays.
Too on the nose.
And like, again, it's on the nose and it's ridiculous, but it is also like the unsubtlety is the point. Like you are building this American myth. Mm-hmm. I find it a really fascinating work. I wonder if an American filmmaker could have made this film, because it is very much a movie from it's like an outsider's POV of like, what is it? What is like a great American of the 20th century? What is his life
America
like?
And Elvis.
Yeah. Victorino, what'd you make of it, buddy? I was interested in the iteration of it would overwhelm everything for
yes,
you.
Yes, well, you
not
know,
a well-paced.
You and I are big Elvis guys, right? No. You more so, I think. Yes, you are. But first the quadrants and then my thoughts. So
terrible on quadrants.
Yes and
this
no.
Is, this movie is death on quadrants.
Yes and no. So I gave the plot an A++. It was very straightforward. It's like a biopic. This is his life from Baz Luhrmann's vision.
It's interesting because we're hopping around a lot.
A little bit. Maybe because if you're familiar with Elvis, you know what's going on and you pick up on everything. And because you know how it ends and what's going on, I could spend more time appreciating some of the little details. Like there's a scene in the limo after he's divorced with Priscilla. And it's like the last time, you know, and he's already with his girlfriend, Ginger. But when they're having this conversation about, you know, talking about the daughter and everything else, Lisa Marie, you see you can see in his hand, he's holding the scepter.
Yeah.
JVL, the scepter, the royal scepter, which sometimes is a flashlight. But that's okay, because he's the king. I mean, it was like, so I'm watching, I'm just staring at it and kind of like laughing to myself. So I really thought it was, okay, duration, I was going to give it an F, and I upgraded it to a C. And I'll tell you why I just give it a C. I saw it was going to be 2 hours and 40 minutes of Baz Luhrmann. I'm like, ugh. And I honestly thought to myself, I'm just going to leave after 2 hours, you know, because I can't,
couldn't,
I don't think I can handle
the musical numbers in the last.
No, no.
Minutes.
And I've
it was too good. You had to watch them.
2 hours and 40 minutes of Moulin Rouge would be a bit much, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. I found myself just glued. And of course, wanting to get to the end, because I was curious, how were they going to get to the end? As
I got to stay for Suspicious Minds.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So that's that. And also the ending itself is like not a dry eye in the house. When they, I said, are they going to show the actual footage of Elvis in all of his glory? That it's one of the few heads that are bigger than mine. When you see that, and he's singing Unchained Melody, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so good. I did feel action violence. I was being sort of half joking here where I gave it a B because there was musical action. Sorry. I found it riveting. I'll tell you what I found riveting. So he goes to Vegas and, you know, it's like, okay, you know, he started with, as he explains, you know, just three or four guys in a band. And now he's got, you know, he's got his black singers, his white singers, and then a 30 and his band.
Yeah.
And then this 30 piece orchestra. And do you know that the scene where he tells the brass to the opening, that the, yeah, those no three more, opening notes?
That is his Zarathustra opening.
Yes, also Sprach Zarathustra, right? The theme, like 2001. And then after that, going right into... in a theater with that sound. Yeah, the whole thing. And I looked, you know, in the theater, there were old people in the theater. And I looked, and I could see them tapping their feet. They were into it.
That is so. I am interested into what anybody who has not seen that, who did not understand that that's how it used to open, because that is, to my mind, the greatest way that any concert or show could ever possibly open. Right? I mean, to have that be with us, it's just unbelievable.
What they didn't show is that sometimes when he'd come out with the white towels and he would wipe his sweat and then give the towel away.
Yeah, throw it into the. And they gave a little bit of the Battle Hymn of the Republic medley.
Yes. I heard
which
that.
Is another one of my favorite.
A little bit. That's bits right. Of Elvis I heard the battle hymn. Yeah. And then Sex and Nudity, you're going to have to.
Really failed. Really you failed may, on this count.
You might have to bleep this, Sonny. Look at the time mark here. Sex and Nudity, I gave it a C. Why is it a C? Because you don't see anything, but the girls, the expressions on the girls' faces, you know what that expression was?
Oh boy.
Do I have to bleep that?
Oh, come on. If you don't flog, I'm going to get in so much trouble. That's so crude. It's so crude. Okay. And don't tell me if you're going to bleep it or not. I like a surprise. But okay. So I was prepared to hate this movie. I did not want to see this movie. And I really love this. I can't believe I'm saying this because I just kept it. And Kate will tell you, you know, I kept on humming, you know, like Elvis songs, like for the next day or two, just because it's so I know. And it's, what I liked about it is probably my expectations were so low because it was Baz Luhrmann that I was like, ugh, that he actually, this is an actual movie. I mean, you know, of an interpretation of Elvis, but nevertheless.
I'm fascinated you like this movie. I figured you would not like it.
I think it's only because I like Elvis.
It is so much.
I know, but I like Elvis. And JVL, I was going to make a joke, but you just answered my question, which was, why wasn't there a scene of, you know, Elvis calling in the hit, you know, to kill the karate instructor, Mike Stone? You know, Mike Stone must die. I guess the estate must have said, no, you
the
can't
whole,
do that.
I mean, all the estate stuff is so crazy that, firstly, all of the drug use is portrayed as basically Elvis getting shot up by other people, right? Is, you know, yeah. Is he's just a pawn.
Dr. Nick.
I was happy that they had Dr. Nicopolis. Yeah.
This is not the way it was. I mean, the Elvis was out there. Dr. Nick was on his speed dial. He would call Dr. Nick in the middle of the night when he was at Graceland. Dr. Nick, come on over. Give me what I need. I mean, Elvis had agency in all of this.
Right.
But the one that really got me was when Priscilla leaves him, right? And he says, yes. Is it because of the girls? And she says, no. Of course it's not because of the girls. I don't care about that at all. I'm only leaving you because I love you too much to watch you hurt yourself like this.
No, if that, only every wife was that
level
understanding.
Of sanitization. I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake here. Like it is one thing to want to protect Elvis, but to then simultaneously want to protect Elvis and make Priscilla the saint who doesn't even care that her husband is banging 30 chicks a day while he's in Vegas.
No,
that doesn't.
No.
She only cares about the well-being of the king.
Okay, so two thoughts. One is, my understanding is that he started taking pills when he was in the army, right? Like things to keep him up at night when they're doing like, you know, night duty and stuff like that. That's what I heard. It started that early. And the second, like speed and things like that. And the second thing is, of course, Elvis had a very complicated, as you know, sexual relationship. He loved his mother very much, as you know, and there's a little bit of that in this movie. He loved her, you know,
just
they were
like
very
any
close.
Good Southern boy does. Are but you saying Norman Bates?
No. But then he sort of, my understanding is that he very much equated Priscilla into a similar role as being as very sacred, like the mother of his children, and therefore couldn't do certain things with her because she is the mother of his children. So he would just do it with other women.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it was.
What I want to know is, do you think that works as an excuse? Is what I'm asking.
I mean, wasn't she like 14 when he started dating?
There's that. Yes, it's Jerry Lee Lewis like, but not as young as Jerry Lee Lewis.
The other thing this movie leaves out is the weirdness of Elvis. So would you guys indulge me so I can tell you my personal Please. Elvis journey? So yeah. I was not into Elvis until, so after I got out of college and my life was falling apart and I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself, I drove around the country and played basketball for 4 months. And I hit all the lower 48 states. And when I was in Memphis, just on a lark, I decided to go to Graceland. And I was blown away by it. For lots of reasons, one of which was just the weirdness of it. Another was I spent a lot of time as I was going through the exhibits reading Elvis's personal correspondence, in which he was like writing to J. Edgar Hoover, volunteering to help roll up drug gangs and stuff, and just volunteering his services and stuff like this. And I mean, he was a prolific letter writer to people in power in the federal government. And you know, this is the guy who showed up on the White House steps to meet Nixon unannounced. Nixon, do you guys remember the famous picture of this? You know, Nixon had no idea who he was. They brought him in, then held him in holding so that they could brief Nixon. And there's that picture where Elvis is like, and Nixon has this like, what the fuck am I doing here? Look on his face. I'll never forget this moment as long as I live. So I'm out of the house in the backyard by the pool and the graves, because they have the gravestones of
They're all there.
Elvis, his mom, I think his twin brothers has been moved over to there. And
eventually, I guess, Vernon.
And Vernon. Our old buddy David Tell, when he first went to Graceland, Vernon was still living there.
No, you know, he met Uncle Vester.
Yeah, right?
There was another guy, Uncle Vester. I was thinking about David Tell.
Uncle Vester?
Yeah. Uncle Vester.
Yeah, that's right. Also living in the house.
I was thinking about David Tell as well while watching this movie.
So I'm out there, and it's like this reflecting place. It's really set up the outside as like a very solemn place. And there was this woman. So I'm 22 years old. There's this woman who probably was only about 35, but who I sort of in my 22 year old thought like, she's an old person. You know, she could be 45 or 50, but not old enough to have ever overlapped with Elvis Presley in any meaningful way. Right. And this woman was sitting there. She had a tattoo on her calf of Elvis's face that was probably 11 inches long. Like this intricate tattoo on her fucking calf of Elvis Presley's face. And she was, you know, probably 240 pounds. And she was weeping, like genuinely weeping by the grave of Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, this is wow. This is something. And Elvis's place in American culture is almost impossible to understand unless you've gone and excavated it a little bit and see, because it really was crazy. He really was an American superhero.
Yeah.
And he was famous in ways that nobody in America has ever been famous before.
Right.
And ultimately, this, you know, there are a lot of things I'd like to talk with you guys about in all of this. You know, the movie sandblasts away his weirdness, which I think it sort of does a disservice to it. But again, that's all part of the making a fable, not a biography. But the weirdness is part of the attraction to him. And I think the weirdness is part of why America was attracted to him. But in his death, the reason it all didn't work out, I don't think people are meant to be as famous as he was. Like, I just don't think the human psyche works at that level of fame. Like, nobody can handle that.
Do you agree that, the story's telling is that this like Colonel Tom Parker basically killed him?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the
particularly
story is
the scene where he collapses. I think he's
Most important thing is that this man gets up on that stage. Right. Yeah,
Dr. Nick, and then they give him the
injection. This is not a truthful reading of the situation. But again, that's what's part of the fable. This is it's Salieri and Mozart. This is Sonny's exactly right.
I'd have to say, by the way, the same thing happened when, like, I knew Elvis. Yeah, his music is great. Okay. And then in 1997, I think me and Peter Lowe and my college buddies, we drove from St. Louis down to Memphis. And he said, we're going to go to Graceland. And he said, okay, sure. Why not? And I came out of that, like, totally just like, wow, I get it now. And I was so, there were so many things about Graceland that are so fascinating. Yeah. And then you just wanted to know more about, and I remember, you know, when you tour the letters that you're talking about the letters. And this is the time when the narration, when you have to take the audio tour, and the audio tour at that time was still Priscilla. It wasn't Lisa Marie, and it was Priscilla Presley and another man. And I remember stopping by, and they actually had a clip of Elvis in Vegas, like one of the later performances when he's so out of it, and he was singing Love Me Tender. And, you know, there's that sort of monologue-ish part of the song where you can go off, and he said something to the effect of 2% sales tax, sugar free.
2% sales tax, sugar free. Yeah,
and I was like, oh man. Yeah. And then the great narration, which was, you know, where they claim that the morning that Elvis died, that
he played racquetball. Racquetball.
Right. It was like four.
And he went back.
Other people who expired. Play 400 pounds, why not get up and play racquetball?
And expired.
That's right. He went to rest. He went to upstairs to rest. And I'm using my quote fingers here.
So for instance, this is a thing which the movie hints at. But this, so I say it ignores his weirdness. All of a sudden in the movie, he's in these elaborate jumpsuits.
Yes.
With belt buckles the size of hubcaps. And rings everywhere and bracelets and the scepter.
Yes.
And the movie just ignores all of that. Like, they're like, yeah, we're going to dress him the way he dressed. And we're just going to don't ask any questions.
Don't ask it. Yeah, that's right.
Right. When this is, you know, like we get the tiger jumpsuit in this, the legendary tiger jump, which was all from his martial arts. Cause he was Dirk Diggler levels into karate.
Oh yes. You know? Yes. Yeah. You know, he had serious instructors, you know.
And you know, his personal logo, TCB with the lightning bolt, which was taking care of business in a flash. Like all this stuff, which you have to understand what Elvis really was. And the movie just, I think it doesn't want to, it just puts all, it presents it in that it puts it on the screen.
It's just there.
But it ignores that it's there. It's like, pretends, of course, it's not even,
you and
happening.
I know about it, but I guess it'd be interesting for other people if they see what's going on.
I would say this to listeners. If you ever have the chance to go to Graceland, do it. Don't pass it up if you have a chance to do it. Because it's crazy.
The best tour I've ever taken in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've gone to sex museums, and this was even better.
I would say, Sonny, have you done Graceland, Sonny?
No,
oh,
I'm not.
My gosh.
I might go so far as to say that you can't understand 20th century America unless you've been to Graceland.
Unless you've seen the Jungle Room.
Yeah. Well, all of this, it's all smaller than you think it would
be.
Oh
my gosh,
like,
it is.
You know, like, yeah, many people who listen to this show probably live in houses bigger than Graceland.
It's something else. Also, I saw the three TV sets, and I do believe he shot one of them supposedly because Robert Goulet was on, but I don't know if
I thought it was just to turn it off because he couldn't find his remote control, or he didn't want to get up to.
Yeah,
to,
he did not like Robert Goulet. That, so.
But yeah, it's an amazing piece of Americana, Sonny.
But man, I knew that we were going to go on about this.
Many Elvis. The other thing is also, can I just say, he is underrated as a musician. And really underrated as a singer. I mean, voice, absolutely. I would, you know, he and Roy Orbison are like, you know, 1A, 1B.
What did you make of Austin Butler's performance as Elvis in this movie?
I liked it. I was skeptical. I mean, I didn't know anything about him. I guess he was a Disney guy, but I knew nothing about him. And I accepted him in the role. Yeah, I thought he was good.
I thought it was great. I mean, I think of these roles as a continuum with Remy Malek's Freddie Mercury impression on one end. Right. So if we have impression and acting on the two ends of the book. And I thought that Austin Butler was
all the way acting. To the other end with yes. acting, where he's actually, yeah. you know, he has a theory about the character. He is portraying that character on screen and you know, has something interesting to do with it. A lot like Taron Egerton in Rocket Man.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah. which had the imprimatur of Elton John.
Yeah. So what did you think, yeah. Sonny? Did you like him?
Yeah.
I thought he was great. I mean, I am not an Elvis guy, as people may have gathered by the fact that I don't have a lot to say in this segment. I'm not an Elvis guy, but I will say that I feel like I understand the appeal of Elvis better now than I did 2 days
yeah.
ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's wild.
There's one thing that was distracting me through the second half of this movie, and Sonny will get this.
Which Having is, to pee?
No, I was glued in there. I was glued in there. The you know, the Christmas special, which I really thought was great, but I want to know, but it seems like they played around with the timing of it. So I'm like, really, it's, you know, like
I didn't, yeah, it wasn't 100% clear to me what was going on.
Right.
There
it's all
either.
Happening at the time of,
what I mean, RFK's but well, it sounded, then, I mean, it sounded to me like they had a plan yes. for a Christmas special and then Elvis just like changed right. it up at the
right.
last minute.
Right. But it was a big, but it was the comeback. There, it was the big comeback.
The 68 comeback special.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. The one on NBC.
And
which is, by the way, if you've ever gotten the soundtrack, it's sensational.
Yeah.
Like yeah. it's so right. good.
So what was distracting for me, Sonny, is I kept looking at the co-producer and thinking to myself, why do I think it's Jared Leto? It's not Jared Leto, but I think it's Jared. No, it's driving me crazy. It's driving me crazy. And then I realized it was Billy from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Like, what do I know this guy from? Oh, it's him.
Yeah, no. It took me a second, too, because I was like, where do I right? know him from? Oh, yeah, said, that's right.
Drive me crazy. Right. Okay. We got to go. Corrections, shout outs, anything? We're good.
That's another shout out to Kristen.
Yes, we said we gave a shout out to KSA. Very, very Maybe happy KSA. For her. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time. Do you have anything?
You know, we didn't even talk about the AMC dine-in, but we could save that for the bonus show where we talk about Blade Runner.
Yes,
which is its 75th anniversary.
So, no? I would say, you know what I was going to say? I remember when Elvis died.
Really?
Yes. I was at 78, so I was like 4 or 5. And I was at the kitchen. This is true. I do remember this because I was young, but I was at the kitchen table and my mother was at the counter. Getting stuff ready for dinner, whatever. And I said to her, I said, Mom, why did Elvis die? And she said, he had a heart attack. And then I said, why did he have a heart attack? And then she said, he ate too much meat.
I'm sure it's fine.